Yeah, and they saw it right away too. Like, you know, I didn't know if they would. They're so LA that I didn't know if they would necessarily like understand the English kid. But I sent.
But he's quite clear though, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that they could appreciate it. All right, this is what I wanted to show you. So this is like the most influential early UK BMX street video, and also happens to be the first time I ever heard you. Ever heard a UK rapper, probably, period. And I just remember at this time being fucking shocked and appalled and not knowing what the fuck I was listening to. But
oh, stop that.
See? Back in these days, so nobody was asking 2003? For clearance. Probably about 2005 that came out, 2004.
Okay.
So this was my first time ever hearing, you know, grime, UK rap, you, anything like that. And this was just these kids from Sheffield. They made this video and they were the first ones, because I was like a BMX dude for like the whole early part of my life. This was the first time that I ever, that like the UK had necessarily really like made its mark in terms of like the street BMX scene.
Okay.
And of course they had you on the soundtrack.
I never knew that.
Yeah, I know. See, that's crazy, because like nowadays the shit's on YouTube. It gets claimed. The money goes to your bank account. Back in the day, you know, they'd press up.
Was that YouTube?
It's on Vimeo or YouTube now. I can send you the link.
Because would it have come out just on one of them DVDs? It
was before DVDs even. It was VHS tapes. And there would be like a couple thousand of them floating around type shit.
Fucking no. Okay,
isn't that crazy?
Mad. Yeah, that's mad. Because yeah. I don't even remember when YouTube came on.
2006 or so, I would say.
Okay. Right.
Is my guess.
Right, so I don't remember it. I didn't pay attention to it till maybe like 2009 or something like that.
You were a late bloomer on the internet?
Yeah, because you could say that. Yeah, when it comes to like social media stuff, like I got into. I've never had a Facebook. I've had like a Facebook fan for whatever, someone who runs it.
Right.
I've never been on Facebook. I don't know how to do that.
Mm.
But I got into Instagram. I was in LA in 2000. And it had to have been like 12 or 13.
Uh-huh.
And I was with Snoop. And he showed me it. Because I was there and he kept putting the phone on me. I was like, what is he doing? And he showed me, yeah, this is Instagram.
Right.
This is when it was just
photos.
A photo app.
Before the video came out. Yeah. Now it's like all videos.
Before all that, yeah.
Now you're lame if you're posting a photo, because it's not going to get as many likes as a video, right?
Exactly. But I like that as well, because I think the video is more interactive, it's more interesting, isn't it? I like posting videos as opposed to photos.
Yeah. I mean, it's so easy to get lost and just trapped in that just sunken place of just looking at this fucking content on your phone for hours like that, you know? It's like anything you're interested in, you can just go deep down that fucking wormhole.
No, you can. You can. It's good for seeing what's going on somewhere like in another place.
Yeah,
like, so that's good to keep up with stuff.
But I mean, I could definitely say it fucks with my brain, to be honest. Like when I get lost and just looking at all these hot ass girls I'll never meet.
You can meet them though, innit?
Maybe if you're willing to put in the work. But you know, I got a girlfriend, so I try to keep my mind like, you know, I'm not gonna actually. I try not to go down.
Let's fling that out there quickly before you set yourself up for that though.
She don't give a fuck. I can meet the girl though. Shit.
Okay, all right. Swiftly moving on before you get into some shit.
Nah, it's all right. I just feel like it's appropriate that we have a conversation, because I've been talking to all these fucking new up and coming rap dudes and stuff. So it's like, it just makes sense that we go back to the foremost elder statesman of the scene.
Jeez. That's crazy.
How's it feel to even be talked about in those terms? Because I feel like you're somebody who got the OG card, like, preemptively, because you're, like, you're only 35, right?
34.
But you've been...
I've been in it since I was young.
Since you were a little kid. So motherfuckers always, when they see somebody like that, will always act like you're old before you actually really are old, because they're so used to seeing you. Is that how you feel?
No, that's what I'm gathering now. Like, people, they just, they throw around OG and all that kind of thing. And I think, right, like... Like, me, an OG is like 40.
People don't understand plus. That's a little bit of a diss when it comes to rappers. It's like, yeah, I appreciate being your OG, but at the same time, don't act like I'm old yet.
I guess it could, but then again, my Bun B, he's an OG, or Jay-Z, they're OGs. People are called like OGs, but I swear they're in their 40s though, or late. I think Bun might be late 30s.
I think Jay-Z's definitely in his 40s, right?
He's about to hit 50, isn't it? But OG, it's good to have OGs in this game, like older rappers, because it just, in other scenes, it's not a problem necessarily. Like, from Frank Sinatra made his biggest, like, when did he make My Way? He was like 60 or something, innit?
Beats me.
You want a career, like, spanning that long. Me personally, I hope I get old in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the crazy thing too, though, is that you broke open all these doors for this whole new generation of all the things that we see happen in UK rap now. But it was a struggle for you. Like, it was actually were going through the hell of breaking through in a way that people now, all this stuff is sort of accepted.
It's normal. Yeah. Everything from being at festivals, working my way to the main stage, and then even they're making me do other stuff. Like, it was obviously I'm a rapper, it was me, my hype man, DJ, but in this time they'd make us use a band because they couldn't see the vision. Like, how can you be up there and deal with all these thousands of people? So then there's times we had to use the band, show them you would smash it, and then get back to what we do.
And now if you look at the wireless lineup, almost every single person on it is just a guy.
It's crazy. I did wireless like 2008 or something like that, and it weren't even a hip hop festival then.
Really?
It's crazy. It was in Hyde Park. It was wireless, innit?
They had a bunch of bands and DJs and shit, or?
Yeah, basically, yeah, because Basement Jack's headlined that one. Mm. I remember. I mean, that's where I met Prince Harry, and then, because that's kind of like his back garden, like, innit? Yeah, it's Hyde Park, innit?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's theirs. So, like, yeah.
That's crazy. So, how do you feel when you look at this new generation of all these kids who are coming out that are getting accolades and getting recognized on a level that I guess you probably always, you know, do you feel proud when you look at everything that your countrymen are accomplishing?
Well, see, like, the drill stuff.
Mm.
Like, I like that music. I'll check for that. Like, I like Russ. I like Lowski. I listen to them, not right at the beginning of their careers, because they're so much younger than me. I don't, like, but once they come to my attention, I was into that, because I was into Chief Keef and all that when that came out. And then I was into Soulja Boy and Migos when they first come out. See, when Migos had the tune Holmes, when they first got with Gucci Mane, they were wearing the little black.
Yeah.
And before that, I was into 3-6 Mafia and Project Pat's one of my favorite rappers. Getty Green and Mr. Dunkplay are like my favorite rap albums.
Yeah, those are two classics that I still go back to be honest. I don't go back to that much old music.
Right, but they just are what they are, innit?
Yeah.
So I see all of that in the same lineage.
Yeah.
And I'm in there somewhere in between. Somewhere.
That's what's funny is that you clearly, from hearing you talk about music, you have like a ability to appreciate all kinds of music, including music that, you know, diehard hip hop fans are looking at as being, you know, sort of a bastardization of hip hop.
Right.
But you've got enough of an appreciation for all that kind of stuff. Like, I heard you talking about mumble rap in an interview and saying, like, you know, I don't think they're mumbling. I like what they're doing.
Not because the Southern drawl to me, like, I understand it, because I've listened to Southern music that long, and Juvenile and all them were doing it, the same thing, really.
Do you remember when you saw the Ha video?
I didn't see it when it came out.
Right.
I remember when it came out, because I remember Westwood used to play the remix with Jay-Z on it.
Yeah.
And I wasn't quite into Hot Boys and all that stuff then, but I just remember it being off key, like, this guy's like, oh, yeah. When I watched the video later, I saw it, it's sick. I'd love to do videos, like, even just the way it was shot, it's kind of shot like almost photography, in a way.
I think I was 12 when I saw that. I had never seen a video that made me feel like that, or that you felt like they were depicting a culture such a raw way.
But it's crazy, because I did a show, The House of Blues. It had to be a few years before Katrina. Oh. And just because I was so into like No Limit and Cash Money and all of that, when I went there, I have to go to, was it the Calliope?
Third Ward, or was it
Ninth Ward?
Ninth Ward.
I went there. Like, I said, nah, take me there. And then when I got there, I said, yeah, I've seen enough.
Was it grimy as fuck?
There's a tension, yeah, in the air, and just like a vibe of just, you see when bad, like something, anything could happen. Like, at that kind of vibe. Yeah. And I've shot videos in places like that. When me and Bun and Pimp C did a song called Where's the G's? It was on my third album, okay. Maths and English, which crazy, in America, came out on LP's label, Def Jux at the time, when it came out there. But yeah, we shot a video in Third Ward in Houston, and it was similar. I remember, it was so grabby, so raw. I remember you had to get permission from whoever the guy was, like, and then they come and bless the area for us or whatever. But I remember, I just thought I knew poverty. I remember there was one thing, there was like, you see, because some of them houses like, not almost like shacks. And I remember one of the film crew must have picked a door, and used it for off the puddle. They just thought it was just a random door.
Right.
And like later on in the day, someone like, who took my motherfucking door? Like, it was the woman's door. Like, right. Like, yeah, she's like, yeah, what are you fucking doing?
But if you
like,
could just easily remove the door like that, but she still felt.
That's what I'm saying. That's the kind of poverty thing you're dealing with and whatever. They were all on edge because whoever from over there had been overshooting and they were waiting for the get back. It was all that kind of tense enough. That's how Ninth Ward in New Orleans felt. And the crazy thing is that none of those places are there no more.
Yeah.
Like after obviously Katrina, they knocked down thingy. And then just after the, where's the G shoot? I don't know where the Third Ward thing went. It's all gone. So I've got to see where that music really came from. Just a lot of the Southern hip hop.
Yeah.
Because New York ghettos are different. That's what I learned. And in LA, ghettos are different. Mm-hmm. I remember when I went to, cause I've been touring in US and going there since like 2003, 2004. So odd enough, but I'd always wanted to go to and see the areas for myself. So then I went to Compton, but I thought Compton was nice because it was houses.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I thought, oh, this ain't that bad. But then you understand like, nah, it's not sweet.
Right.
It's not what you think.
Cause out here, it's all about the housing projects.
Yeah, we've got estates.
Yeah.
So that's where it's closer to new government housing.
And where everybody's sort of cooped up in the same place. So that's where all this bad shit starts happening more or less, right?
Yeah, it was a guy called Attlee. I can't remember his full name. Attlee. He's like 100 years ago or something like that. The first council estate officially is round the corner.
Right.
In Shoreditch. That was the actual first one they built.
Wow.
So government housing. It was supposed to be affordable housing, but then obviously it wasn't affordable. Most people couldn't buy it. And it wasn't until Thatcher came along the way you was allowed to actually buy it, right? Well, ain't that, that's what happened. Yeah.
See, it's interesting because when we talk about like Juvenile early on, I mean, I think that's what he was, one of the best things that you could do, especially if you're like the first big rapper from an area, is to really give the people that raw depiction of what goes on in that area. And like how much of that stood out to you when you were first coming into the game that you wanted to really tell the story of the people from your area versus just telling your own truth? Like, was that something that would even have sounded familiar to you when you were in your teenage years or early 20s? If I were to be like, you know, you're going to basically be the one laying out the blueprint of helping the outside world understand what it's like to be a kid in the hood in the UK.
I don't think that I knew I would do that.
Mm.
I just think that all the rappers that I was into did that. So I was big on Tupac, Jay-Z, Nas, Eminem. They're all good storytellers. And same with a lot of the Southern stuff. Even if you find Project Pat and all that simple or Master P, you definitely got a sense of where they were from. And then my other influence came from Garage MCs and Drum and Bass MCs because they sounded like where I was from. Like, they set it. Personally, they were the ones who allowed me, I feel, to sound like me and be where I'm. Does that make sense?
Like
they would make first influence.
I mean, you were just so unapologetically yourself and where you were from. Like when I was, that video I just played you, I still remember exactly how I felt when I first saw it. I wasn't even sure that you were speaking English, and I had definitely never heard rap that sounded like that at all. And it was just the most, you know, it really helped with the format of that video and the way it made you feel, because it was like, no, this is, they were unapologetically English, the same way that your music was, you know?
Yeah. And it's good, but most of the stuff I've mentioned to you wasn't big here.
Right.
Like another one person, maybe one rapper that I know of, like who listened to like Master, No Limit religiously and all that was Giggs. I know that he would, but like the real, like he was into Mr. Servon and all that kind of the hard shit.
Right.
So, like that stuff wasn't that popular here. I know up north, Manchester and Birmingham, like they were into
open
that.
To it?
Okay. Yeah, they were really into that. See, even like Trigger, MC Trigger, like he was fucking saying Masterpiece lyrics and those jungle lyrics now, because it worked. But they, those guys, they loved that. But just so I was just open. I was just open. I love Chicago rap. I loved fucking, I even understand that, okay, a lot of the 3-6 Mafia stuff, they were really influenced by what was going on in Detroit. DJ Assault, with the whole ghetto tech stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Ass, titties, and titties. The first Ass and Titties I heard was the one from 3-6 Mafia.
Yeah.
But then later on in life, when I heard, like I said, DJ Assault, it's like, oh, that's his thing.
Right.
So, and seeing, hearing that, everyone. And then it all kind of comes from like Southern influence anyway, the Southern migration for America. Mm. I've learned a lot about that.
Yeah, you know, it's like that. I think you're the same type of person that I am, where I'm interested in other people's cultures. I'm interested in what's going on in other people's neighborhoods, etc. And it's like that primarily with rap, it's like, you know, most people won't ever get a chance to go check out the projects in New Orleans like you did.
Right.
But like, that's what the music was, is like, oh, this is a way for us to understand the slang and the attitude and the style and everything that everybody has from different places. And I think that, you know, that is, a lot of people don't necessarily quantify it that way or think of it as being what they're actually doing when they listen to rap, but you seem like you're somebody who's more understanding that was part of your drive.
Right. And then understanding, once I got to those areas, like me and I hung around with Bun B a lot as a close friend. So
really?
Yeah. When I'm in America, that's usually who I'm with.
Oh, wow.
So there'd be times where I might go to a show with him. He might have a big show. He might have a corporate show. Then he might have a show in a strip club or it'd be some super hood shit. It'd be with him, the Gladiators, all that lot. And when I see the more underground stuff and the way he's moving, that's when I see like, okay, this is basically what I came up in the UK.
Mm.
London and the UK, because it was started off youth clubs, being on pirate radio, playing our music on pirate radio, MCing on pirate radio. But the kind of venues we did were like real super hood venues. And like I said, when I'm over there in America, in down south, we're following them around, we're the same people.
Mm.
It's the same situation before you get kind of the come up. Like, they're kind of clubs where anything can happen.
Right.
Like, drug dealers are putting these things on. People look down on drug dealers and that. But the truth is, without those guys putting the things on in the first place, owning the pirate radio stations and that, there's nothing for us.
Yeah.
Like, there's no avenue because of where we're from.
Definitely.
So seeing all the similarities and all that, like, obviously there's more pimping over there. The pimping thing's not as big or as attached to our scene.
Right.
As that, but it's way more colorful over there, like the Black America or the Black Hood America.
Do you still feel like you get that even from England, in a sense, is that you listen to these new rappers and that sort of just like informs your view of what's going on in neighborhoods that you have no reason to go to at this point and stuff?
Yes and no, because when I listen to a lot of the kids here, I can hear who they're listening to over there, because I still listen to, you mentioned the Shoreline Mafia, I listen to that.
Hell yeah.
Like, I listen to Gunna, so when I can hear a lot of these kids, I can hear their influence,
right,
and I kind of pretty much know what's going on in their hood, unless some of them, they're a bit young for me. So I know what's going on in their hood when I was going around the UK, whatever, 15 years ago, but it's different kids now, so I don't know exactly what's happening, but it's the same shit worldwide.
Really, one thing that everybody seems like they keep mentioning when I talk to these younger rappers or out here is that the cops are just on them. Was it like that for you growing up? Did they even understand what you were doing?
Yeah, but they're onto them. Yeah, and I had the same problem when I came up with police just being onto you and not really wanting you to do the raves and all that. But to be fair, the raves that I came up in, like, people got stabbed and shot and murdered.
Yeah.
Or just there would always be a fight. It would all break out. It'd be rare for a party to finish, innit? Like, that was kind of normal.
Mm.
So they're kind of targeting you and targeting those events. But really, those events, but it wasn't just us. It happened in drum and bass. It happened in garage.
Mm.
It happened in, obviously, the dancehall scene. Any kind of urban scene where just, it's so close to the street or so close to poverty in the first place. So stuff that happens in the mirrors is going to spill off. People have got problems with each other. They're going to party in the same place when they see each other. Depending on how deep the issue is, it's going to get two forces coming together. It's going to explode, innit?
Like, isn't it it's odd to think of that kind of energy being around, like, raves and shit, when you think about where dance music is at right now? Like, my experience of having gone to raves or clubs or any kind of like dance stuff is just like 100% devoid of any chance of violence.
Oh, because it's so, like, you talk about the top end,
because things have changed so much. Yeah,
like Ultra,
yeah,
and them kind of places. Yeah,
you've seen that transformation.
Yeah, because it reached mainstream America. It was where basically the promoters got these super clubs. And these DJs bring in so much punters and they can sell so much alcohol to them. Mm. That's basically what the game is, isn't it? Right. But then you see the difference between when Ultra is in over in Miami and when what's the other one? Rolling Loud was there.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, there's different vibe in it.
They arrested like both. 30 rappers versus I doubt they're arresting any DJs.
Nah, no. You know what I mean? It's like it's a different thing. It's interesting though, but I don't think the police, they're not quite onto guys over here like it is over in America. It's a sad state. The stuff I see online, yeah. I don't know, a lot of some of it's posted to get a rise out of you, but some of it's sad. Like, there's definitely been times where police have taken liberties out of you. Like, there's definitely been times, and I don't want to say it don't happen. I don't want to make no excuses for no one and that. But I feel like most people, when they get pulled over by police here, yeah, I don't think they fear for their life.
Out here?
Nah, I don't think it's the same. I don't want to speak for everybody or everyone, you know what I mean? Because I'm not really in that situation like that no more. But I don't feel like people fear for the, like, they're going to get, like, this policeman just might kill you just because. Like the lack of care and empathy I see on some of these policemen's faces in America, like when you see those videos, it's like, rah, you really wanna kill him.
Yeah.
Like before anything. It's like how did you get to that place in your life where you just wanted to see another human being like you never met just be happy for him to just be dead?
Right.
Like, just give me a reason.
That, yeah, that is a sick fucking disgusting attitude for sure.
I don't feel it's like that here. I feel like You seriously have to get yourself in a certain circle to even get bothered by the police out here. Like
out
that.
Here, really?
To get yourself shot or get in that kind of trouble, you have to kind of a normal kid just going down this road, it might get harassed.
Yeah.
But for something to really go along, but then like I said, I don't want to speak because there's definitely been incidents where the police have just taken liberties, isn't it?
There's a lot of people I've talked to out here have been basically making it sound as if just by default, by being a rapper, that the cops are just on them and just like, you know, fucking with their shows or, you know, fucking with them about certain lyrics, having videos taken down because they're referencing gangs or violence or whatever.
It is what it is though. Like, would the music be as exciting if it wasn't true or right. It wasn't about what was happening and like, and you know the crazy thing, go to wireless, like who is listening to this music and keeping it alive? Like a lot of young dudes are definitely not running around doing that stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
So what is the fear? Is the fear, nah, I'm waffling at this point, I don't know. But fucking it is where it is, isn't it, man? It's not new, is it? It's just new here for it to be so saturated. Like, there was only a few of us when I was coming in. And maybe I was like the first one to really break through to the mainstream and stay there and then travel and go around the world. And that kept me out of trouble.
Yeah.
But nah, I feel like we haven't caught up with America. I feel like we're caught up with France. Because France was the other place outside of America that had their shit together, had their own language as well. And got their stars and got plenty of rappers doing stadiums left, right and center. At least there's got to be at least 10 rappers that can fill Bercy Stadium in Paris or something and tour and do all that. We're still not even there, but we're catching up with, like, there's a generation of kids that have grown up with D-Block Europe. As they care as much about D-Block Europe as they do about Gunna or whoever else, you see what I'm saying?
Which is nice to see for sure.
Yo, why not, innit?
But do you have that sense of pride? Like, do you think about the sense or the state of UK hip hop overall as something that you have pride in, like the same way you would think of like a fucking sports team from where you grew up? Or is it too big to feel unified?
Is it too big to feel? No, it's always nice when people who pop in tell you that you influence them and all that. But if you want a God honest truth, like, it might sound selfish. I'm always just trying to figure out where's my next fucking song gonna come from. That's what I actually care about.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to make another song. That's what I've cared about since I've done this for what, freaking 18 years or something like that.
Yeah, it's actually amazing how consistent you've been and how prolific and how well your stuff still does, and just the fact that you go so out of your way to do stuff with all these new artists and stuff.
Yeah, especially like. Cause I like a lot of the stuff. I like 6-7. Like, I genuinely check for that.
We had them here the other day, yeah.
Right, and then for all, how they demonize some of these kids, and it's not like these kids don't help them demonize them with their content or whatever. Right. But it's like ain't no difference. All like the shit that happened to us when we were younger anyway. But when you sit down with these guys, I don't want to call them kids at this point. When you sit down with these young rappers or whatever you want to call them, yeah. Like, I have like proper decent conversations with a lot of them. A lot of them are like quite normal, quite smart, and just like they're in other little situations that they kind of that we all get ourselves in scrapes. Some get into bigger scrapes, but they are usually just get good kids. Like I was sitting there with Scribs and him explaining to me that when Chief Keef and that come out, someone in their area showed them a video of them like, wow, these kids are just like you.
Mm.
And then how they were influenced by that. And by now UK drill stepped off and it's its own thing.
Mm.
And like I said, and they are smashing wireless and of their own merit. And like, yeah, it's good.
When you first came to America, you talked about going and seeing Compton or whatever, but what was your first time, your first memory of seeing America?
My first was I went to LA to shoot Fix Up Look Sharp video. That's the first. Or did I go to New York? I went to New York first in 2003. Yeah. I went to LA. Yeah, LA was the first place I ever went to outside of England.
Mm.
I'm sure it was. So, and I think that might have been the end of 2002. 2003, and I shot a video for Fix Up Look Sharp. I shot it in the Valley, and it was with Ruben Fleischer. Ruben Fleischer made Zombieland.
Okay.
Big Rob and Black, that's his program.
Right.
He's done a few things, a couple other things as well. But I just remember going and staying at the London Hotel now. It used to be called the Wyndham Bellage.
Okay.
You remember? You know it?
No.
It's I think it's kind of around the corner from Sunset.
Okay.
So I used to stay there. And I used to see Luke Goss all the time and he used to chat. I remember going into the shop and seeing the wall of fitted hats and trainers. I remember smoking weed and it blowing my mind. I'll smoke some weed, yeah? And I just started doing some, I went mad. I just started body popping in the middle of the room for ages.
Wow.
And I passed out.
Really?
Yeah, I remember I was just some shit like that.
You went and sat down on the couch and passed out, or you passed out in the middle of the room and cracked your head open?
I didn't know. It weren't that bad. Okay. I just know that I had to shut down for a bit.
Yeah, I remember the first time I smoked weed in California, really like, you know, having like a period of like months of sort of getting used to it and just like not really understanding that I was being antisocial and weird and not talking and like just being sort of too reclusive because I couldn't stop hitting the blunt when my friends would light it up. But at the same time, it was clearly having like a negative effect on my personality, my ability to be on camera in particular at that time.
Bro, I can't remember. I remember going there years later. And then learning to roll a blunt, and then that changed everything. But
yeah,
then I became a smoker. I wasn't a smoker before. I always smoked weed on and off.
Right.
And I learned to roll blunts in LA. Oh god! And then I just kept going to LA. I was there a lot, enjoying.
You're still a smoker?
Nah, no. I ain't smoked for like 5 years.
Really? Why'd you give it up?
I got to that point where a couple little things happened, but I got to that point where I was like, rah, I'm a smoker. Like I'm smoking. When you got so much free time on your hands as an artist, musician, you could be around in the day and smoke as much as you want. Wake up, smoke 8-9 zoots.
Yeah.
And then I went out with Dave Chappelle and Donnell Rollins.
Right.
They were here for a show. I went out with them. We smoked. We went to a D'Angelo show. We went to, is it Chilton Firehouse? Ate fried chicken. And listened to music and that, and I said, you know what? After this, I'm not smoking weed, and I just stopped. And really? I smoked since.
That just did it.
Yeah, but that's a nice way to end it, isn't it?
Yeah,
with Dave Chappelle.
That's crazy.
Favorite comedian. Yeah.
And I always hear that the comedy world is like tons of potheads now. Like Joe Rogan was saying that it used to be people would be doing coke and drinking and shit. And now they're just a bunch of nerds who just smoke weed.
There's nothing wrong with that, is it?
Yeah.
I didn't stop smoking because I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were trying to get your life a bit more organized and stuff because you felt like you were getting too grown up, you had too much to deal with?
I just wanted to just clear my head again and just do nothing. I'm not a big drinker or nothing anyway. I can like easily just not drink. But then I just got that teetotal and then just really started looking at what was happening around me and just fixing certain things and just like almost done a 360. I just became super on point and sharp and just now I'm just beaming. And then, yeah. And then I got a bit relaxed again.
Right.
But yeah, I could still be around it. And to be fair, like I've been in the studio where there's people smoking a lot of weed. Like they made a song with Skepta, like, what was it, last year or something? There's a room full of people smoking weed. You can tell everyone to get out, but then you're gonna kind of change the vibe. And it's all in the, you know what I'm talking about, yeah. So it's like, I'll just sit here and just do this and get it done, innit?
That like, doesn't tempt you at all, though? You're not intrigued by it?
Nah. Almost feel like, fuck, I wish I would have carried on, because now everyone's fucking got cannabis companies and all right. Shit like that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, might look a little disingenuous if you got back in it now.
Yeah, but I just don't care now.
Yeah.
I don't care enough about weed. So, yeah, but maybe, who knows, I might miss out on a shitload of money.
It's crazy, because when I think about all my time coming to England when I was more just like a BMX guy, is that I just felt like everybody was just off cocaine and ketamine, and everybody was drinking so much. And then all these fucking dorks that I'm hanging out with out here, they don't party or anything. Everybody's got super squeaky clean lifestyles and stuff.
The younger generation made look after themselves better, innit, man?
You think?
Maybe, because of all the fun I had, a lot of it I can't remember anyway.
Really?
And a lot of it don't matter. So, whatever.
Yeah, but is that the purpose of doing anything in life, is to be able to remember it well? Because I think about that sometimes, is that, you know, cause I've had people tell me, like, you got to keep a journal. I'm like, I'm not keeping a fucking journal.
That. Yeah.
But that, like, I do get it, because it's kind of like the value of having experience is that you can reflect on it. And if you're living so fast that you never really get a chance to sit back and think, like, about what you've been through, then how much are those memories really worth?
You know what? I've got a lot of photos. But I print my photos. Like, I bought a printer just to print photos.
Mm.
I've got like thousands of photos. You look back on it, it always makes you happy. There's something about having it in the physical.
Yeah.
Like, so every now and then, even when I post, I don't post most of my photos. So I have them on my phone, taking pictures of whatever events, and then you print them there. There's nothing like going through like old school, like going through a photo album. Just go to Boots, buy one £4 or something like that, and fill it up. Like, it's nice.
You were carrying an actual camera around for years?
Yeah, I've been one of them kids, for some reason, even, I bought like a little camcorder, even before I properly blew up. So I've got little videos of me going around the area, up to stuff, whatever, and little camera, and going on holidays, and always maybe taking a disposable camera. So I've got like, I'm happy I did all that. I don't know why I did it. Yeah. I just wanted to just document. I've always been into that stuff.
Yeah, when you look back at all of the stuff that you've seen and everything, what stands out to you as the most shocking thing? Just that, like, I can't believe that I actually got to live this experience that I never, ever, as just a kid growing up in the UK, would have thought that I'd be able to enjoy.
I was looking at, I found an old Canon recently in my house. And I just looked through it. I was like, oh, it's old videos of me backstage getting ready to go on a perform at the 2012 Olympics,
because
I was on the opening ceremony.
Wow.
And even that was mad. That was a mad experience, looking at
the Olympics. What are you guys thinking? Like, you don't know where I come from. You don't know that I'm not the kind of guy that would ever be near the Olympics typically.
But the crazy thing is that the Olympics that year was built kind of where I'm from.
Mm.
Because, you know, they usually build it in like the rougher areas, and then they regenerate it or gentrify it.
And it never works, and they always end up losing tons of money on it.
You know what I mean? there's that in it. So that's one of the craziest ones. There's been other like mad, if we had time, I would remember. There's been loads of like mad stuff that's happened, crazy stuff. Like,
what's your lifestyle like these days, like in terms of how fast you're moving now? Because it's like, you know, you seem to me like you're still working your ass off, but how has things changed in terms of the speed of life that you enjoy?
I feel I might have slowed down a bit, because I'm not like, there was a little time where I was just like, for 4 years, I was just bouncing around America between Miami, LA, Vegas, and Houston, and a bit of the Caribbean.
Mm.
But only because from when I was like maybe 16, I just worked nonstop. I still had holidays, but I just worked nonstop. And it was the first time where I must have gone to Miami for Christmas and then just didn't want to come back. And then,
right.
bought a place out there, and I was just enjoying myself. And then so now I feel like I've got a lot of that out of my system. Because I always went to America and we always went to them places, but it was mainly for work.
Mm.
So you did the thing, whatever, mess around, party, have fun and all that. But you're there for work. This time I'll go there, I'll get some work done, but I'm not there for work.
Right.
But now I've got all that out of my system, I'm kind of just leveled out and all that, and kind of like I said, teetotal, whatever you want to call it for now. And then, I don't know, it's an even more interesting time, because you can almost do less than before. Yeah. Because like you can do, like come here, do this blog with you, few thousand people see it. It's more engaging. People get this. Whereas I might go to Paris and do 11, 12 interviews, asking people asking me the same shit.
Right.
And that's draining.
It is.
You know what I mean? So now everything's a bit more, I'll say it's easier in a way.
Yeah.
But the thing that's not easier, obviously, is just like, you need to get the songs, you need to make the hits. Everything for me, boys, I'm not the dude that's got loads of different businesses everywhere else and other little things there. Part of me wishes, maybe I wish I would have done that, but I really just like the music. So it means a constant thing. I have to keep the music going.
Yeah, definitely. No, I mean, that's a constant decision that you can be making in life. Like as a musician in particular, myself, like I always think of that as like, you know, in LA, there's different parties every night. And if I were to go to those parties and you're just drinking beers and smoking weed with all these different people and stuff, you could find yourself into a lot of good situations as a rapper. It's the same thing where there's a lot of benefits that can come from that. But then at the same time, it's like at a certain point, your personality, I feel like, has to shift where you get a little bit tired of just living that life day in, day out, of just trying to socialize, trying to reach that next level of society, of progression, of meeting this person and that. And like, you know, a lot of that stuff is pretty beneficial to you when you're a young rapper, but I feel like there's always like a clock ticking in terms of how much of that you can really stomach.
And you know what else as well, as you're saying that, it may remind me like, oh yeah, that can be the problem with being a rapper, because you just, when you're not thinking about business as much. Like, especially with the game, just keep shifting. There's stuff that I signed when I was younger or whatever that I'm not like crazy regretful. Like, oh my God, why did I do that? But it's like, rah, if I was just a bit more in tune, on point, I wouldn't have gone for that. And enough, there's other decisions that I made that really like, it's made me comfortable now as well. But like, I'm definitely more on point. Like, I'll read paperwork now. I want to know everything that's happening, all the stuff like that. I guess it's part of getting older, being an adult. Like, so yeah, just being more important, just not just trying to be a Jack the Lad for the sake of being Jack the Lad. Because a lot of, especially being a young rapper, you're almost encouraged to be more image based and like, oh look, he's acting crazy, he's acting up, and then label or whoever gets behind that, and sometimes that's what propels you, innit? All the while they're in the background, dotting the I's or crossing the T's and making shit like. Patterned.
Being a bit older, do you see the record companies as being at fault to a certain extent, because they are in a lot of ways sort of just dressing up stereotypes of the worst parts of society and like antisocial behavior and things that they would never, you know, a 40-year-old fucking guy who owns a label in LA would be horrified if his kid was doing 1/10 of the shit that their star artist is doing. And that we let them skate off without any sort of responsibility about the stuff that they're promoting. And in a lot of ways, it's the audience, too, that's egging these kids on, because they want you to get face tattoos. They want you to do prescription pills. They want you to get arrested, shoot somebody, take your own life in your hands. And they celebrate people for getting into those situations.
It's worse now.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's down to the labels. Maybe it's down to older heads in the industry, but then maybe it's down to younger heads to maybe try and listen more and whatever. You got a bit of an ego at that age when you're younger, so you're not really trying to hear nothing from no one. So then you kind of put yourself in the position to just be taken advantage of. It's a tough one, man.
Yeah, it is, because it's like, you don't, like, on one hand, you just know that the audience wants what the audience wants, and now more than ever, the record labels don't really have the ability or the power to shape public opinion like they do. They just have to fucking fall in line with what they can already tell is working on social media and stuff like that. And that's another strange thing to see develop with the labels, is that they're not really developing anybody. They're watching and waiting for something to hit off on its own, and then they try to put their muscle behind it.
They're jumping behind it, and sometimes I wonder how much muscle have they got. Some of them, obviously, it's worked, but it's more than the label. A lot of the time is the unspoken people, like maybe the DJ or some other influencers, or you see The Black Godfather on Netflix.
No,
you see it, you watch it. There's a documentary about this guy in America who's basically very involved in a lot of the big deals, or very influential, just kind of just in the music scene.
Oh, okay.
But you'd never heard of him, and he's pushed so. Once you watch it, you know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Anyone who's seen it like knows what I'm talking about. But you know, there's a bunch of those people in every situation. Like someone linked someone up with, it's like you just linked up H with Shoreline Mafia.
Right.
You know, it's in 10 years time, they might be the biggest. It's people, sometimes it's people like that that do as much as record labels, if I'm making sense.
Like in, that's that, I think for people like us that are like very, like your entire business is based on you being in front of the camera. Same with me. It's very intriguing to me when I think about the people at the record labels who get to just be behind the office wall. And that they get to just sort of, you know, pull strings and orchestrate this business and stuff. And those kind of people are always the people who low-key, deep down, want to be celebrities.
Yeah.
But I'm always fascinated by that because for me, it's like I don't really have a career unless I'm out putting myself in front of the camera, unless I'm talking about my own shit, about what I've been through and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I'm always kind of intrigued by what it would be like to be the kind of person that doesn't have to, like, monetize their own existence, which is what anybody who's sort of a content creator basically has to do.
Yeah, you're kind of whoring yourself out a bit there, but then it depends. If you're your own pimp, then I guess you're still the boss, isn't it?
Best case scenario.
In a way, but some people are just really making it work for themselves. Like especially with some people, just the pattern of social media just so and just really carrying their own empire, man.
Yeah.
Like when I see that, that's one thing I have to like commend the up and comings on. They just go for it.
Right.
Like, where I'm not as like I'm not letting it all out, but then I guess I did it as a kid. I had all hype and all other mad stuff going on when I was coming up. I just didn't think of it like that at the time,
right?
Because I was just right in the thick of it.
Yeah,
a lot of the shit that was going on with me when I was young was happening so fast, I didn't know what to make of any of it. It was just kind of happening.
Yeah.
So now I'm older, I can look back at it like rah, fuck, like rah, that happened. Plenty of crazy stuff like. Plenty of stuff, and then you have to deal with being in the public eye. And then I got to a point where I was really in the public eye.
Right.
And then it's like it gets a bit much. It's a bit mad.
You've kind of shunned social media for the most part.
Yeah, I'm not overly big on it because I had a little period when I was out there in Miami and all that when I was enjoying myself a bit too much. Nah, I wasn't enjoying myself too much. I was just really enjoying myself. Yeah, but I was posting stuff that if I was in England, I might not have posted it.
Right.
Because when you're away, you know what I mean? But then, fucking whatever, you're like, I'm in a strip club, or whatever, 2 a.m, like, got a bunch of asses in my face.
Right.
I'm posting it, it's 8 a.m. in England, if I was going to work. Like,
it was like your friends you went to high school with have something to look at on the train on the way to work.
Yeah, or their kids, or their mum. Like, you know what I mean? It's all kind of stuff you're just not thinking about because you're following a pattern of people that you watch. That's what they're doing. Oh, that's how Snoop's going on. Or that's how this one's going on. They're just throwing out everything up there. And then the truth is, I'm not even like that.
Right.
That's, you know, this guy, he's known me since I was like 8. Young. Like young.
8.
Like, we're from the same neighborhood.
Oh, okay.
Like for real. Like, so like, yeah, I was running around. Yeah. Like, yeah, I was about, but as far as private, I've always been quite private. So I don't know, I just kind of let loose. And because of that, I was just enjoying the social media. Like, but really, like, not really in it. Like, I don't like.
Yeah. No. Sometimes I you know, I have like sick, twisted thoughts. Like, I was at Wireless all day. I was around a ton of different rappers, whatever. And I didn't like one of the days. I just didn't even update my Instagram story or Snapchat the whole time. And then afterwards, I'm just like, God damn it! Like, yeah. You know, nobody's gonna even know I was there. Like, I could put out the YouTube videos later or whatever. But in some sense, if you're doing all this shit where you're like really going out of your way to put yourself in a social situation with a bunch of other rappers or people in the music industry or whatever, it's like you're kind of missing out on a
living.
Large part of the missing out on part of the benefit if you're not depicting it on social media. Even though that stands out to me as sort of a warped way of thinking it, but it's true. You're missing out on some value
but
there.
But that's where I've had to kind of. Not almost barter with myself, like, okay, do you really want it? Do you really want to be crazy worldwide at this point? Start putting, because you're going to have to do that. And I've got to the point where it's like, you know what? I'm not sure. Because one thing I have, since I stopped posting so much, I've definitely been just living. Like, and just like living in the moment and experiencing stuff and almost kind of made me normal again, which I kind of, maybe I missed out on when I was younger. Because I wasn't living a normal life.
Do you think that did you start to get to that point where you were becoming less of a real human being as you were experiencing the money and success and shit like that, and that you feel like you've gotten some of it back by maybe like sort of living more of like a humble existence compared to where you were at for a while?
Think of it now. For all these, everyone's doing all this stuff now that they're smashing festivals. They're doing everything. I've been doing that since 2004 or something like that. So when I was 18, 19, I was going around Europe or going around America and going to work. Most people I know, they didn't even start really, really working until like their 20s or whatever, you know what I mean? So I've just been doing that. So, and then exposure to all other kind of stuff. Good, I've got to see the side of America. I'm into the cultural stuff. I'm into rap so much. I'm glad I got to see all that stuff and understand it differently. But then I missed out on stuff here. Like when my friends were growing up, I was away. So I missed kind of growing up with them in a way, which is a weird one, which almost don't matter because when I go back, one times when I did come back, no one liked each other. Everyone was fighting and beefing each other anyway. And no one, like, I was like, oh, what's going on with him? Like, I don't really check for him no more.
Yeah.
So maybe I got to a point where I'm a bit more nostalgic about it than everyone else is.
Right.
But it's just made a bit of homesick.
It's a weird feeling when you've done so much more living than everybody that you came up around. Like when I go back to where I grew up, like a couple of years ago, I went to the mall with my family. And, you know, I'm walking around in the Sears and there was like two different people that came up to me and were like, oh, I'm whatever from high school. You remember me? I'm like, no,
right. Definitely yeah, not. That happens.
You know how many thousands of people I met since I met you. But to a lot of people, you know, that being 18, being a senior in high school, that's like the highlight from a social perspective of their entire life.
Right.
Whereas you in like a couple of years after high school had probably lived more than most people that you grew up around ever would.
And then in a weird way, I don't know nothing else.
Mm.
So it's like, well, ain't that how it's supposed to be?
Right.
You know what I mean? Cause it's that age. And then trying things and doing things. Just seeing the world in a different way. I've been to private islands and fucking private jets and just all that, and still manage to come down and just be normal.
Yeah.
At the same time, but then it's only when you have these conversations with other people, then it's not normal.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to have that fine balance of not being, and then people don't even treat you normal.
Yeah.
When people go out of their way to say that, oh yeah, I don't really know who you are. But people don't say that. Who goes down the street and says that, oh, so I don't really know who you are? That's not a thing that normal for someone. So you're not behaving normally, innit? Like, yeah. You're just normal, innit?
People see you taking a picture with somebody else, with some fan or whatever, and then they come over and ask you who,
like,
you
who
are.
Who you are, yeah.
And then, like, it's hard for other people to understand how fucking annoyed that I could be with just communicating with random people, partially because that is, like, people just, when they see somebody and that like celebrity starts to like creep into their brain, they just start acting in weird ways that like you would never act towards a normal person. So
people,
it's like,
free.
I'm a lot more annoyed by like just random people than people could really understand, because you get to see all this weird behavior that normal people don't get to witness.
Yeah, exactly. So there's the word, you can never see the world in the same light, because you want to go to normal stuff and then people don't act normal when you're there.
Yeah.
Because they're trying their best to act normal. it's a lot. So you have to have a lot of patience in this thing. There's times when you just like, you wish you could just turn it off.
Mm.
And there's other times when you don't, because you'll go shop and they just love you. And it's like, no, it's all right. You don't have to pay for it.
Yeah, I heard you on another podcast. You were talking about like how, and it's just sort of painted this picture of what your life must be like. You're like, you know, I'm just at this restaurant trying to eat my fucking curry. And I got some random guy talking in my ears, asking me about somebody I was friends with 10 years ago, asking me about this album and this, that. And you're just like, what the fuck, bro? Let me eat my food.
Yeah, and then there's the people with the conspiracy theories and all sorts of other, or whatever they heard like about you 15 years ago just become gospel now. But they think it's all right to just be sitting there asking you about it. There's just a lot of weird shit. And people, it's just nuts, bro. It's just nuts. I just come into stuff where I'm way more, no, I can't say I'm normal, but I'm way more down the line and kind of down to earth. I'm kind of dude who try and be just cool with everyone, innit? But some of the shit that comes out of people's mouths sometimes, bro, it's just mad, you know? It's just mad.
Just shocking.
Yeah, it's like, what the fuck are you on about, man? It's nuts, man. If you really knew what I was really like, you wouldn't have bothered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And once you really have a sort of bird's eye view of the kind of shit that people are interested in, then that sort of can fuck you up too, because you start to realize, like, out of all of these, like, 15 years or so that you've been active, it's like people just want to gravitate towards these little sound bites of like things that were saleable enough for their attention to be sparked. And that's just, it's got to be even more oppressive for you. But I mean, I notice that when I do interviews, a lot of times it'll be like, you know, you had this one confrontation with someone all these years ago.
Right.
And that is like a central focus of
forever. Like, you fucking still talking about that. fucking hell, like, is it mad? Do you know how much I've done since then? Yeah. Like, shit, fucking get over it. It's the same with music. There's some people that just, they like one era, but then I understand that too, because like there's, like I said, Project Pat still makes music.
Yeah.
But I rinse Mr. Don't Play.
Right.
I'm like, because it means more to like, there's something, you feel a certain way driving around listening to it.
Yeah.
So I get it. It is what it is, but you can't, it's tough because you can't live in the past.
Yeah.
If you live in the past, you're using your energy to try and recreate a vibe that was only there in the first place because of the world around you.
Yeah.
And the world's changed.
But it's kind of like the same way that every time you play a show, you got to play you got to play songs from 10 plus years ago, including songs that you don't like anymore, songs that you don't really, you know, you don't relate to the place that you were at when you wrote that song.
Mm.
It's the same way that when you go to do an interview, people want you to rehash all your old stories. It's like, those are your greatest hits.
With the songs, it's different though.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it depending on where I am. A happy cry to me is just a happy cry. Like, yeah, you like that one? Wicked. Let's do that. Like, yeah, I'm doing the thing. Yeah, right. They like it. Bless, we'll go home. That's about fine,
your attitude too, because if you see yourself as somebody who wants to entertain these people, then that's good. If you see yourself as, you know, an artist that like you want the crowd to be on board for whatever you're trying to throw at them, it could be a hard way.
I've learned that one though.
Yeah.
Like, trying to force new music on people. And you want them to like it more than your old shit. You kind of had to strip back your ego a bit, like, and just understand that, well, they like that. So just be happy they like that. You've been booked, you've been paid. That's what they want. Let's get on with it.
I've seen Chief Keef do that though, honestly. I've seen him come to shows and just didn't play any of his hits. All stuff from the last year or two that he actually really likes. And the crowd looked a little bit saddened by it, but it was like kind of amazing just to be like, man, he really doesn't give a fuck.
Nah, he don't, but he might later on.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, because when you do that, you're taking away a moment. You can't force shit on people. Like, they've already come there, they want that thing that they've listened to, that they've had some of their best times in life, because music can be a soundtrack to all the good shit in your life and the bad shit. But then even the bad shit, you can listen to song, but this song got me through that bad shit. So when everyone's coming, there's nothing better than when people come in together, all strangers, for like, just to come and just enjoy and jump up and down and thing to something that you wrote and sing it back to you. I've always been serious about live music. Live, always. I fucking put this shit on the main stage, all these festivals in England ages ago. So I've been serious about all doing the live thing, and then my own concerts, my own shows, because I understand that's the chance to bring the music to life. They are actually the things that matter to me, making the music and performing the music. Everything else, if I had a chance to not do fucking interviews or whatever other bollocks, bullshit, fucking radio, sitting there chatting with assholes who you know don't like you and you don't like them, but you have to do it for some reason, then I would not do that.
If your music could just go platinum and you didn't have to try to sell it at all, I mean, shit, that'd be a great life. But
yeah, unless you only was to sell it, was to perform it.
Yeah.
And meet people like that who just genuinely just check for your shit and leave out all the other dickheads in between. Yeah.
Do you have any songs that you sort of dread performing, or that you're not as happy with than your other ones?
Nah.
No.
All my shit is great.
Do you have any lyrics that you subtly change the lyric because you don't want to mention somebody that you had shouted out in that song, or there was like something where you were going to just subtly change it and they might not even notice?
Nah, I just usually forget shit and carry on.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, that'll do. Man,
keep it positive, you know.
What, so you still are prolific. Do you just still just hear a beat and it still just comes to you? Like, no problem at all?
Or sometimes it don't.
Really?
And it's learning to, and then it's like, should I just move on then? Like, especially right now, I've made so much beats. I was in a studio with P Money recently, yeah. I was playing him all this stuff, and he's like, bro, what are you doing, man? This stuff needs to come out. You need to do something with it. But it's not like back in the day we was on Pirate Radio. I could just fling the beat out on White Label or whatever, and it'll get out there. I've got old beats, like, because before I was like on make songs, I'll put instrumentals out. I've got one called Ho, Go, Ho Strings, all this stuff that's like legendary. But now I'm trying to get my head around, like, could I just put an instrumental out? Because I've got tons of them. There's a hardcore grime scene here.
Yeah.
That shit is just them. But me, I want to put lyrics on it. Definitely. That's, but sometimes you just haven't got the bars.
Yeah.
You haven't got that energy. Sometimes you just got nothing to say. You just haven't, like,
yeah.
Or the shit you've got to say, no one cares about. Like, just, yes, I'm blessed. Everything's good. I'm the best. Just you just feel like that.
Yeah.
That was shit. But I'm just like, you just feel so good, you just write ball of shit and just like how great you're doing. And sometimes people don't care. Some people just want to hear dirt and struggle. Or...
A lot of young people, really, that's like why they make the bad antisocial decisions that they make early on, is like, they will shoot somebody, or they will get addicted to drugs, or they'll join a gang. It's like more or less just to have something to rap about.
Yeah, I can see that.
If they have no struggle, then there's nothing to really talk about, and they know that, so they create a struggle for themselves, even if they grew up in a place where they didn't have to struggle.
Yeah, or even you can still grow. I'm like adamant about, even in the roughest areas in the hoods, whatever you want to fucking call it, I still feel like the majority of people are just getting on with it.
Yeah.
Everyone's not a criminal. Everyone's not a thug. Everyone's not a gangster. Even in the hardest areas.
No.
So you make your choice. Some people I've grown up with, I can see that, well, your dad was doing that and your dad moved a certain way and doesn't know how to move another way. You got that from him. But they're rare. I feel like they're rare. I think everyone else kind of has a choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's crazy just to see what people sort of react to. I was interviewing Daylight, the battle rapper, the other day.
Yeah.
And he was just saying, he's like, it's just sickening how easily people are fooled. And he starts sort of like freestyling off the top, and he starts saying something about having the gun on him or whatever. And it just immediately sounded hard as fuck to me. Mm. And he's like, he's like, I just did that to you. Like, I just made you like that freestyle by saying something stupid as fuck about a gun, but these tricks just work over and over. Like, and I feel like sometimes that's part of the problem, is people get more and more jaded as time goes by. They start to realize that a lot of the rap shit is smoke and mirrors, and that sort of takes them away from it.
Entertainment is smoke and mirrors.
Mm.
That's the whole point of it. All the biggest entertainers, even think from the rock world, like look, you had rock and roll, yeah, but then when it got into like heavy metal or fucking like Black Sabbath. What's my man's name?
Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah, and Alice Cooper and all them. Right, yeah. They were theatrical guys, innit? Mm. Iron Maiden. Like, it was all about it. That's what took it to that next level, innit?
Mm.
Like, are they sitting there really worshipping Satan and doing that? They're probably not. Like, they're just on private jets or just enjoying nice stuff or whatever. Yeah. Or doing crazy drugs as well.
But at the same time, like, when you're a young person starting a band, like, you probably really are living the crazy life that you're talking about. But then it's like, as soon as you start getting money, you start getting older, all that stuff starts to slip away.
Or it gets worse.
Depends. So it's
like Sid Vicious and them kind of people. Yeah. Like, they went too far, innit?
That's true.
It depends, man. It depends. But yeah, it's all entertainment. That's the whole purpose of it. Some of it's coming from whatever real hard, serious place. And then that's like why some people, like, yeah, their music ain't as pointless enough, because, like you said, people are ignorant. If they want to hear... Well, it's the same reason they just like fucking Scarface or whatever dumb film. Like, Scarface is a dumb film. It was dumb.
Mm.
People love Scarface. Like, right. Yeah, look, he shot him. Yeah, he was in there. He had the machine gun. Yeah, he went out like a gangster. Yeah, like, if they came to his yard and just lit him up. And he fucked up his relationship with his mum, and he's got his sister killed and his mate. that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, the general lesson to be learned is, like, don't join a gang. Don't start selling drugs on a huge scale.
Or do it properly.
Yeah.
Or kill the kid. I told you, no woman, no kids. Do it. Do it properly.
Don't you yourself become
am I going to regret saying that?
Kill the kid.
Don't kill the kid. I'm playing. But stupidity, innit?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. People like extreme shit.
The same people who watch American History X. It's like every fucking Nazi's favorite movie, and the whole fucking movie is about why you probably shouldn't be a Nazi.
Right. But people pick the bits they like, innit? Right. That's human being. Look, they fucking had what? How long ago was it? Like, I'm swearing a lot, innit? I'm trying to keep down. I'm swearing.
Oh, that's okay.
But like, what is it, maybe 100 years ago where they had beheadings in the street, around the corner? People took their kids.
Around the corner.
Same in Rare, people took their kids to lynching.
Yeah.
Lynchings. They had the Colosseums, blood sport. Like, that's how people are.
That's humanity.
We like to see, because everyone really deep down wants to do someone. Yeah. So, but we don't want to get rid of it. And the other thing, the same thing over here, like, right now, I don't like talking about it. You've got the whole stabbing thing, yeah? And everyone's going on the stabbing, and it's fucked. Something needs to be done about it. But when you think, one of the biggest exports from this country, yeah, that thousands of people, millions of people from around the world come to London to see, yeah, is to go on the Jack the Ripper walk. This geezer, yeah, they still fucking ain't worked out who he is. Was just going around and stabbing the shit out of people.
Yeah.
And he's a legend forever. Mm. And people are coming here for that.
Do you think the stabbing thing is a little bit of like...
See, I've opened myself up now. I don't answer no more questions about that.
No more stabbing talk?
I just wanted to get my point across about Jack the Ripper.
But is that partially just like media hysteria? Like the way that they talk about it as if it's this very specific thing?
It is a specific thing, yeah. But maybe they should talk about murder as a whole and then put them stats out and then see what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting to me because I see like the numbers in terms of murders in London and stuff versus the number of murders in America, and it just sort of makes me realize that the media and the government are going to treat, they're going to act like there's a really big problem no matter what, because we're looking at like an order of magnitude difference in terms of the levels of violence, but still, you know, it's like they have to always focus in on something. They have to find something for them to be concerned about.
To regardless. Be fair, there is something there. There is, like, it's sad to see these, like, this, it's a bit, it is a bit nuts out here. And I'm still fighting with, is it worse than when I was younger?
Right.
Because I saw all the same shit.
About, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But,
because it wasn't as much of a media narrative when you were young. It was just sort was, of the things was, that happened, right?
There was more, I swear there was more stab, in 2003, there was more stabbings than there were last year or something like that. I swear it was almost double.
But everything spreads a lot faster on social media. Everybody, you know, has access to this sort of stuff easier, right?
You know what? Obviously, parents are losing their kids. So before whatever I think or whatever stats views thing here, that is the main thing because people are losing their kids. So maybe I should just even leave it at that because that is what matters, isn't it? That's sad.
And it sort of comes back to just like hopelessness, you know.
People, and it's like, it's getting ready to go. We've got to go now. It's a bit hot in here.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll lay off trying to implicate you for the rise of knife crime in London.
Me? I'm a pop star, mate. Shit.
All right. So, for you, tell me what I need to check out from you in terms of like your recent output. What should everybody be keeping their eye out for?
Oh, I put out a wicked EP called Don't Gas Me. That was the last thing I put out. I think it was last year. And I put out an album called Rascit, maybe like 2017. Fire. Like just all rapping. I got half of it was produced by Cardo. You know Cardo, innit?
Oh wow, really?
Yeah. I should have kept the name tags on there, man.
That's crazy. I didn't know that. Oh, you took the tags off.
Yeah, because you know what? Because I'm old school, I didn't want it to sound like a mixtape. But think about it now, right? It might have people like, before I fucking paid for it.
I always wonder if I'm the only one who feels like the producer tag thing a lot of times feels a little weird. Cheap. Like this is supposed to be art.
Yeah,
and
that's how I feel.
You're over here just stamping your brand name on it, even though you were a part of it and you don't get to shout your name out.
No, but when you hear that Metro booming, right? You just know that it's official.
That's like a little bit of a cosign right there.
Yeah, yeah. So like, I should have kept that.
I hate people that only sing along to the producer tags though.
You know what's crazy is the fact that they do, and it's interesting because you're so involved in music that you forget how people respond outside of the industry. And it's like, oh, that's a hook to them.
Yeah,
they're used to that. That's part of the song.
It's so bizarre.
Was it Muzza on the beat? It's like, okay, so that's interesting. It's still what people. That's the thing you always learn in this game. You never stop learning. That's what I like about it.
You've been making beats for a little while now, right?
I ain't got a producer tag, man. I was gonna go under a different name for my production. I've been toying with names. I was gonna call Spud Gun, or the Spud. You know that ain't gonna work.
What was that? I missed out on that joke.
Spud Gun.
What's that?
It's stupid, bro. It don't matter.
I'm gonna understand by the next time I come
spud
back.
Spud gun, here. Potato gun.
Spud gun. Okay.
I don't know why I thought of that. I've heard no one say spud gun for a long time, and the first thing to come to my head, it's getting hot. I'm doing too much now, innit? Fuck it. Yo, man, it's good to meet you.
Appreciate you, bro. Yes, thank you so much. Honestly, it was an honor to get to talk to you. Thank you, man. Perfect way to wrap up this ridiculous string of UK interviews I've been doing out here. Yeah, man.
Nah, man, you're a hard worker, man.
Hey, we out here.
Yeah, man.
Dizzy Rascal. Bless No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Check us out on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes.